Okay, so our next speaker is Francis Umisiri. Did I say that okay?
Yep.
Okay. He grew up in Nigeria, has done graduate programs in Michigan and Ohio. He's currently an assistant professor of chemistry at John Brown University in Arkansas. So please join me in welcoming our next speaker, Dr. Umisiri.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for coming over to listen to my talk. I know there are two or three other sections you could be by now. I'll be speaking briefly about fasting. So how did I come about this? Leslie said, I grew up in Nigeria, and back in Nigeria, I don't know, it's just part of, you know, the Christian discipline. People fasted way more often. That was my experience when I got to the U.S. here. And so when I got to the U.S., at the beginning, I fasted a little more, and then gradually, I was doing very little or none of it. And anyway, so in 2011, in the fall, when I resumed at John Brown University, towards the end of the year, on one of the days I had finished classes and finished office hours, I was tired and needed to just relax and do something. So I picked up a science journal and just flipping through. Go figure, relaxing with science journal. But anyway, so... So I was flipping through that, and then I came across this article on caloric restriction and intermittent fasting. And it just blew me away, the amount of research that is already going on in that area. First of all, I had no idea that it's even a disciplinary section in itself. So anyway, so I started thinking about that. And I started sort of reviewing literature on that area. I sort of gave myself about 70 years span to sort of go back and see what is available. And so out of that kind of study, it's what this came out of. And so I began to put together some of my thoughts in a book form, and this talk is born out of that. But first of all, what is the definition of fasting, at least scientifically? So there are three ways literature looks at fasting. And so one is caloric restriction, which is just about 20 to 40% reduction in your normal consumption of food. You know, that's one way. The other is intermittent fasting or alternate day fasting, meaning you fast one day and then the next day you eat, you know, ad libitum, you eat normally and then maybe fast the other day. Or intermittent fasting, where you basically fast once or twice or thrice in a week, and you know it doesn't have to alternate necessarily, but you just fast that. It turns out, in terms of health benefits, both caloric restriction and alternative fasting are really comparable when it comes to things like diabetes, type 2 diabetes, cancer, and all that things like that. But in terms of weight loss, incidentally, caloric restriction is more effective. And slightly too more effective in some of the other health benefits because it's a little more sustainable and it's a little long term. The last one, which is the third one, is dietary restrictions. And so in this case where you choose to say either completely minimize your carbohydrate intake or eliminate that or do that with protein or whatever, the macronutrients sort of fast on those, sort of similar to what we do sometimes in Lent or things like that. But it turns out this is not nearly as effective. In fact, only protein restriction had some measure of health benefits, and that comes mostly from reduction in methionine, just one amino acid there. And methionine is available in most protein foods, and so which is one of the things that was responsible for that. In our lower animal models, in fact, about 20%, about restriction in methionine resulted in about 20% lifespan and stuff like that, which is really significant. Well, fasting in general has about two areas of health benefits. One is what people in this line of study describes as health span, meaning the period of our life in which we're sort of disease-free. Disease-free here has to do with chronic diseases or age-associated diseases, cancer, neurodegenerative diseases like memory loss, things like that. And so it is pretty safe to say, if you look at the whole literature going back to 70 years at least, it's consistent that fasting does have a significant effect in our health span. The other area, it's lifespan. In terms of, how long we live. Incidentally, for animal models, almost all animal models, except one exception I will mention later on, it's almost conclusive that indeed fasting, whether it's caloric restriction or alternate day fasting, does extend lifespan. However, for humans, that's far from conclusive. Very, very far from conclusive. What is obvious is that for humans, we do derive those other health benefits in terms of health span, but not in lifespan. But anyway, that was one major question that needed to be answered, whether fasting does have some effect in extending human life. And so early this decade, NIH sponsored this comprehensive clinical randomized study on humans in three centers to see, among other things, but one of the chief goals of that study was to see whether fasting does indeed extend human life. It was almost a consensus that it does have health benefits, even on humans from prior studies, but to see whether on humans it does have any. And so I will refer to this study. The short is, calorie, just a play on calorie, because right now it is the most reputable, if you like, study we have on humans, clinically speaking, that is randomized. And so it's I'll base some of my discussions on that. Phase one of this is already concluded. Phase two is almost actually concluded, but they're still writing up. So most of the publications on phase two will not be available, but phase one studies are all available, and you can look that up for yourself. But what this study also shows, in fact, is that in terms of health span, in terms of health benefits, reducing our risk towards cancer, type 2 diabetes, neurodegenerative diseases, cardiovascular problems, that indeed fasting does help. Now, this is on human clinical studies now, no more just on animal studies. And, of course, it's hard to judge this directly, and so most of this is based on measurement of biomarkers, health biomarkers, like insulin sensitivity and stuff like that to judge. So it's sort of an indirect estimation, if you like. So what I like to do then is to take a few of those disease states, diabetes, cancer, and maybe heart problems, and just give a snapshot of some of the things going on. In terms of type 2 diabetes, I mean, it makes sense that fasting will help, because if you think about it, large adiposity is implicated in diabetes, especially type 2 diabetes. And if you eat less, it goes to think that you will lose weight. And if you lose weight, then, of course, it will have benefits in terms of reducing the risk for that. And indeed, that is true throughout all animal models, also the human clinical study. But what is interesting here, at least for me as I studied this, was that even when people did not lose weight, because I told you that caloric restriction, you will lose weight more, but in terms of intermittent fasting or alternate day fasting, people did not always lose weight. And you can imagine why. You fasted all day today. Tomorrow you are tempted to gorge on food. So you kind of balance it out. So people really didn't lose much weight in many of the intermittent fasting. However, even when there was not a significant weight loss in the population studied, it was clear that fasting blood sugar levels were still low, even when insulin insensitivity was still not significantly changed. And so that caused a few other people to pick up that study. What is it about fasting in general that does help with reducing fasting blood sugar levels? And so recent studies, if you go back to literature and Andrew Luko and others there, they're implicating the role of fasting on beta cells, regulation of insulin storage and production and all of that. And so there's something, let me pause here to say, at the background on all of this health studies on fasting, there are in two major ways, there are other explanations, molecular explanations and other explanations for why fasting may be this helpful. One is the idea of homeostasis, the idea that fasting is considered a mild biological stressor. And so the idea that if you introduce a stressor to the biological system, then it sets in motion other biological processes that the body wants to respond to that stress. And in trying to respond to that stress, it produces a range of other physiological processes that then are beneficial. Think about exercise, for example. Exercise on its own, if you're doing an intense exercise, it's sort of a stressful situation. It's a biological stressor. It releases all kinds of oxy radicals and all of that while you're exercising. But you and I know that if we exercise moderately, intermittently, and regularly enough, it is a beneficial thing to us. Still, on itself, it's not very beneficial. Why is that? The reason is that the more you exercise, because exercise is a biological mild stressor, your body releases counter biological processes to sort of neutralize the stress and the oxy radicals or whatever. And so the overall effect of that is that the body is stimulated to produce a range of beneficial effects that then outweighs that mild stressor. So that once you stop, the range of biological processes released still continues to act on your behalf, which is why we need to keep doing it over and over to maintain it. So that's one school of thought for fasting, that fasting does a similar thing to us, that it's a stressor, and so the body in time to respond to that stress. And if you doubt me, try fasting a whole day without food. You will know that from your brain to everywhere, it's just very uncomfortable to the body. And so it makes sense. The second reason, it's sort of reduction in oxidative damage. But here again, studies show it's not so much in reduction of production of oxy radicals as in production of antioxidants, but in terms of prevention at the onset from the mitochondrial electron transport system. The argument is that fasting sort of increases the efficiency of the mitochondrial processes. And so electron leakages within the electron transport system is highly minimized. And so it's not so much of antioxidant production as in prevention of more oxy radicals, electron leakage in the system. So in general form, that's sort of the explanation. And that's kind of that homeostasis that they feel is sort of affecting the function of beta cells here in terms of type 2 diabetes to have that. For cancer, I think this one, in fact, there was a parallel study. The first study here I'm referring to is on monkeys, rhesus monkeys. There was a two-year study that were parallel, actually. One was in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, I think Madison, and one was at NIH. And the two studies were not by the same people, but they ran parallel for 20 years. And so what they did was put these monkeys into somewhere in 30% calorie reduction. Others, were fed normally for 20 years, and they studied and monitored them throughout. At the end of those 20 years, the monkeys that really were calorie restricted had about 50% reduction in cancer incidence. And in terms of longevity, it wasn't as conclusive. The study in University of Wisconsin-Madison, there was a lifespan increase for the the monkeys that were calorie restricted by 30%. But in the study in NIH, it was not significant enough to warrant a difference. So again, that shows that in terms of longevity, it's not something that anybody who is in this field can conclusively say. But in terms of actual health benefits, it seems to work. But how about in humans? Well, the celery also confirms indeed that there were significant reduction in biological biomarkers that were indicative of cancer. Things like oxidative radical formations, mitochondrial efficiency, and stuff like that. And don't forget, the celery, it's our largest study of this type, about 220 participants in three centers in there. So while a second phase is going on, it's, in my opinion, at least fairly encouraging to take some of the studies seriously. Well, in terms of atherosclerosis, the part of the goal of the calorie study was to see if fasting does help in some ways with, heart risk, heart diseases risk. And again, what they did here was group some of the participants into three because they also wanted to see the role of exercise with fasting to see whether that makes an effect. And so about 25% calorie restricted, another group were 12.5% along with exercise, and then a third group had none of either exercise or fasting and they ate normally. And at the end of 6 months, they fasted for 6 months. Again, the results show that those who were really fasting, whether with or without exercise, that they had a significant enough reduction in heart disease risk. In fact, after they did this, they did some calculations based on the data they had, and the projection was that for those who fasted just 25% with or without exercise, they had a chance of living 10 years longer than those who didn't fast in terms of their propensity to heart diseases. Well, the question is, as believers then, the kind of fasting we do, like the Daniel fast, for example, or the Lent, the Nativity fast, for example, are there any studies that have been done on them? Well, the answer is yes. At least Joseph Bloomberg in University of Memphis has done way more in this area than others. And so they've studied extensively the Daniel fast. And for those of you, just a reminder, Daniel fast, if you read Daniel chapter 1 from verse 8, Daniel and the other Jews were taken to captivity in Babylon. And Leslie just talked about the vegetarian diets and all the other kinds of diet. So Daniel decided, well, we're not going to eat the king's food, which had a lot of meat and all sacrificed to idols and all of that, and he didn't want to be partaking of that. But that meant, well, he has to eat a different kind of food, and that was going to be mostly vegetable foods and all of that. And so he chose to do that after he got the favor of the person in charge of looking after their food. And at the end of the period they ate that, I think it was 3 months or so, Daniel and all the other group who participated in that diet were just as fine. In fact, even healthier than others. And if you look at Daniel chapter 10, the same thing Daniel said, I undertook a fast for 21 days and I ate no meat or any of the dairy foods and stuff like that. So that sort of Daniel fast is more of a vegan diet, essentially. All the studies done by Bloomberg and others shows that it does have comparable results to all the other ones that NIH-sponsored calorie already has. But the problem was that for this diet, at least for all the studies that they did, there was a reduction in cholesterol, which is good. But the bad thing was that there was a reduction in both the good and the bad cholesterol. The LDL and HDL, everything just went down. And so they thought, okay, maybe because it was more of a vegan thing, so they tried to introduce a few sources of HDL in the diet, and then they redid the study 2 years later. The HDL was slightly increased, but not increased high enough. And so their recommendation, at least, is that those who undertake the Daniel fast should be intentional, at least in including sources of HDL in their diet. The other one is the Lent and the Nativity fast. The Nativity fast, I think it's usually about 48 days to Christmas, and the Lent is about 40 days to Easter. And some studies have been done here. There are not a lot of studies, about two or three, about two actually. But those two were a little, they were not conclusive, they were a little missed, especially when it comes to things like blood pressure and stuff like that. One study, you know, the blood pressure was reduced, one it was increased, so it was not nearly as conclusive. Well, part of this talk is, this first part is on the, if you like, the health benefits part of it. But as a Christian, I have always fasted, at least when I was in Nigeria, not for the health benefits. I knew it has to be good for me, but I had no clue. You know, I was fasting because it was a way to seek the Lord. It was a way, it was a Christian discipline to, if you like, humble yourself, give God the gift of time and consecration as a seed to, you know, to stay in God's presence. But as I studied all of this, even though, yes, we're looking at the health benefits, but what struck me is that if you really think about it, we're talking about cancer, diabetes, heart diseases, memory loss. I mean, it basically points to human frailty. Talks about our mortality. And that's why Isaiah 40 struck me deeply as I concluded these studies. Let me read quickly for you from verse 27, Isaiah chapter 40 from verse 27. He said, "Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable." You see, here the prophet speaks to the people of God and says, well, haven't you heard, haven't you seen that God, who is the creator of the heavens and the earth, in other words, there's something we can hear or learn from listening to God, who is the creator of the heavens and the earth. And the prophet was making that insistence because Israel is in this state of weakness, in this state, if you like, of realizing how faint they are. Israel is saying, Lord, why are you not helping me out of my faint, weak situation? And so, in my mind, I think fasting helps us to listen to God. Fasting helps us to stay in the presence of God enough to hear that the God who made it all is able to take care of us. Verse 29 says, "He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." Within a period of 3 years, between 2010 and 2013, I lost my dad, I lost my mom, I lost my immediate younger sister. For me, that was a season like Israel saying, Lord, what's going on? Why are you not coming through? Why are you not helping me out? It was a very low state for me. I remember the pastor of our church when my younger sister passed on. I mean, it was one loss too many for me. I didn't think I could handle. After my mom died, within a year, my dad died, my mom died. I was trying to still deal with that, and then my sister died. And then with visa issues and work issues, I couldn't even go for the burial. So I was in this state where it was really difficult. I remember the pastor visited the house and asked me, "How are you dealing with that?" I told him, I don't know how I'm dealing with it, except that I have been forced to just wait on the Lord. To say, "Lord, here am I. Help me." I think that's what fasting does. Fasting helps us to humble ourselves before the Lord, even when we don't make sense of what is happening, but it reminds us that God, who made it all in the beginning, is able to take care of tomorrow. And in that process, we yield ourselves and we surrender to Him. And so for me, whether the health benefits are there, which is very important, if there's a takeaway, I think it's to encourage you. I know that we're in a culture where it's almost like people disdain the idea of fasting. It's like, do you have to really fast for God to hear you? As though somehow in our Christianity today, in 21st century, we've suddenly become wiser than all our fathers who've gone through the faith and who saw some spiritual benefit in the discipline of occasionally waiting on the Lord, not only in prayer, but in fasting. So my encouragement as I round up is to think about fasting a little bit. You don't have to do a full day to begin. You can fast breakfast, you know, or fast breakfast and lunch, or even just go on fruits, you know, for the whole day and maybe have dinner in the evening. But whatever works, just especially when you are intentional about hearing the Lord and asking for His grace, so just incorporate that once in a while. I think it might be helpful. Thank you. I will take any questions. Yes.
Well, I'm 72 years old. Is it more beneficial or less beneficial for me to fast versus you?
I don't know the answer. But I think that if you look at from the health benefits point of view, I think we both benefit. Since in terms of longevity, it's not conclusive that fasting does extend our human life. But it does help increase our health span. And so you will benefit from that as I would do. Yes, there's an argument to be made that because I'm younger, that I might benefit more from it because I have more to live before. In other words, I have more opportunity to avoid, you know, age-associated diseases. And if this helps with reducing the risk of age-associated diseases, because I'm a little further away from that, you can say that maybe in that sense I have more benefit. But as a Christian, I do think we both, all of us, equally benefit from that consecration and the seed of time that we give God to work in us.
Did I hear you that the date here is when your book comes out?
Yes, it's being released January 5th, yeah. And yes, it's been published by Charisma House, yes.
One more quick question.
We see in Scripture, in the ascetical tradition, that the benefits of fasting aren't merely sort of like personal in terms of like attitudinal submission to God or something, but actually seem to increase receptivity to visionary experience or have some benefit in terms of conducting spiritual warfare or something mm-hmm. like that. Do you think that there's any kind of physiological basis for this, or is that beyond the scope of what can be answered scientifically?
I don't know all of the answers. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that there's a part of my book that dwells on the benefits, the neurological benefits of this. And so in fact, a couple of guys in NIH, Matheson and the rest of them, have spent a lot of time investigating the role of fasting in sort of a neurological development and all of that. And I think that it does have a lot of benefits on that. But the spiritual part of that by experience and by faith, I think that we do agree that, I do think that too, at least from my Christian tradition back in Nigeria, fasting does help in some way to help us be more receptive to the Holy Spirit, and therefore to the works of the Holy Spirit, whether it's in manifestations of his gifts through us or in us in some form or another. I certainly do think that. But is that the reason we fast as a beginning? I don't think so. I think we should fast because it's just opportunity to consecrate and submit to the Lord and let him work in us.
Thank you so much.